Hi, this is Andy Peck, the host of The Leadership Show. This autumn, we're going to be diving into the archive and re-releasing the most popular shows for you. So this week, a show which was broadcast in January 2022, it was with Catherine Hill, and it was looking at leading children in the age of the screen.
It's great to welcome you to the show that aims to help you use your influence for God's purposes. You were minding your own business in your home when you notice that the house across the street seems to have an unusual number of visitors who seem to be going in and out very freely. At times, the door is wide open. It doesn't seem that the lock is ever used. You become especially alarmed when you realize that the mum and dad have left the house in the car earlier that day, leaving their children playing in the garden, and so seem to be home alone as these various visitors make their way in and out. Given the volume of people, there can't be relatives or church members. And when the pattern seems to be repeated day after day, you start to take a very dim view of the parents and become concerned for the safety of their children. Well, this modern day parable describes how life is with the advent of the internet and the smartphone. Many children and teens are literally exposed to anyone and anything, with parents completely oblivious to what is going on. With 91% of 12 to 15s owning a smartphone and children much younger having access to digital devices, we are facing an alarming situation. One day we may look back on these days and ask, what were we thinking? Well, on the Leadership Show, we aim to help Christians in leadership wherever that influence is exercised. And so today we focus especially on the influence in the home. And I'm delighted that Catherine Hill joins us. She's the UK Director of Care for the Family and author of Left to Their Own Devices, Confident Parenting in a Post-Pandemic World of Screens. And so the release of the third edition of the book provides us with an occasion to chat about how the digital revolution impacts home life and our lives in general. So Catherine, fantastic to have you along to the Leadership Show. Thanks for joining us.
No, thanks so much for inviting me. Really good to be with you.
So let's talk first about the reason for writing the book. And of course, for producing a third edition, you presumably wrote it a few years ago.
Yes, it's quite soon, really, to have written a third edition to a book that was only first came out in 2017. But the reason I wrote it in the first place was I was increasingly concerned, particularly at Care for the Family, at the number of parents that were asking us for help in how to navigate the digital age. So brought out the first edition and then second edition, because technology had changed. And then, of course, the pandemic has changed everything to do with our relationship with technology. It's actually been a lifesaver, but as I'm sure we'll explore in a minute, there's a shadow side as well. And so really, on the back of the pandemic, we wanted to bring out a new edition that dealt with some of the challenges and that dealt with some of the advantages as well, and put practical solutions in parents' hands to help keep their children safe and use the internet well.
Brilliant. And your own family situation, you're a mum?
I am a mum. I'm also a granny. Wow. During the pandemic, we have had four grandchildren.
Oh, so, gracious.
We have four children, and three of them are married with little ones. So we've got right across the spectrum. So one that's just a couple of months old, going to two, and then adult children as well. So I'm married to Richard, and we live in Bristol.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations on that milestone of being a granny. So despite my introduction focusing on the negatives, your book looks at some of the benefits of the digital revolution as well as the drawbacks. So maybe you could kind of outline what you see as a state of play with regards to a screen-focused world.
Yeah, I think if we've learned anything in the pandemic, it has been, well, first of all, it's been that change is here to stay, that we're not in control of our lives. But also, I think we've come to appreciate some of the advantages of technology. I think most of us are well aware of the dangers, and that's one of the reasons for writing the book. But there are some huge advantages as well. And in terms of the pandemic, that's how we've been able during lockdown to keep in touch with family and friends, to go to church online, to work. Most grandparents now have become tech wizards overnight, being able to connect with grandchildren. So that has been vital. But also in terms of our young people, it's enabled them to keep social lives ticking over. For our teenagers, they're at a particular age when they are trying to establish their identity away from us, their parents. And so smartphone enables them to do exactly that. Loads of advantages for children with additional needs. Many parents who parent children with additional needs will know that. And yeah, just all the kind of well-rehearsed advantages that we know. At the flick of a switch or the touch of a screen, we can now find information about anything and all in real time. You know, how your football team's doing, or looking up some date for your history homework or something to do with science, and all at our fingertips. And I think also our young people are much more globally and socially aware than many of us were at their age. And again, that plays into that, enabling them to be informed and to engage. So loads of advantages, but many, many dangers as well. And that's the task for us as parents, to navigate our way through and equip our children to do that.
No, it's brilliant. And obviously, as grandparents too, I was interested in your stat about the number of grandparents who are carers of children.
Yes. And so grandparents then have to manage. I actually look after one of my grandchildren one day a week now. And we have to manage what the parents' view of technology in the home might be and what we want it to be in our home, and just manage that relationship well. Some of the stuff that's available for young children is completely brilliant. But I think the danger is we use it as a babysitter. We maybe put it on and we forget just how long they've been watching it. And the infinite scroll means that we can go from one YouTube thing to another, to another, to another. And before we know it, they're looking at something that we never intended them to look at in the first place.
I was amused by the quote, information overload can be confusing and harmful, which comes from Conrad Gessner, writing in 1565. Obviously, there's a sense that new technology will always have an element of challenge to it, I guess. And we must be careful not to be just alarmed because we are the age we are. There's always been a new generation of technology which has affected people.
That is right. I love that quote. And things like the printing press, when that was invented, people were up in arms about that. Television, I mean, all kinds of things. But I do think we're in a different situation now. So in terms of new technology, in the book, I talk about two different categories of people. So there are the digital visitors, and that by and large is parents who use technology as a tool. So we might go on to go online and do a supermarket order and come off, might go back on and send an email and come off again. And then the other category are called digital residents, and they basically live their life online. Life is digital by default. And in relation to technology, by and large, parents will be visitors and our young people will be residents. I do think that the pandemic has changed that, and I think the edges are blurred. But inevitably, our children are always going to be a step ahead of us. And the fact that technology is developing at such a fast pace, and we can be in touch anytime, any place, 24/7, I think creates advantages, but some big dangers that we've not seen before.
So you write about three styles of parenting, which I thought was really helpful. Maybe you could outline them and we can discover which we think we are, and indeed whether we're the same as our spouse.
Yeah, so experts agree that there are generally three styles of parenting. And this isn't just in relation to how we manage technology. This is how we parent across the board. So at one end of the spectrum is the permissive parent. Now, permissive parents are laissez-faire, anything goes, anytime, any day, very few rules, any rules that there are no consequences if they are crossed. Now, the disadvantage to this style of parenting is that our children don't feel secure. They need boundaries, if only for security. And so that is one end of the spectrum. The advantage of that is that they have lots of room for creativity and independence. Then the other end is the authoritarian parent. Now, that's much more the sergeant major, loads of rules about everything. So screen time would be, you know, you're allowed 10 minutes of television from 5:03 to 5:13. Once you've done your homework, you would earn screen time, maybe for doing jobs in the house by the minute. And every single one of the rules about anything and everything is enforced regardless. And the good thing for this style of parenting for children is that they know exactly where they stand. They know what's allowed and what isn't allowed, but there is no room for creativity and independence and for them to discover things themselves. And so what we want to aim for as parents is in the middle of those two, which is called the assertive style. And what that means is that there are rules, but only about things that really matter. As few rules as possible in line with our family values. And then with those things that we think are important, we enforce them and we make sure that we're consistent. We say what we mean what we say. Now, inevitably, I'm a parent and I have definitely often said yes to things I shouldn't have done and enforced things I shouldn't have done. And we will get it wrong. But if we can just keep that in mind, that the assertive style of parenting, it's been shown by loads of researchers to be the best way to bring up confidence, well-adjusted children who understand the security of boundaries. So that would be, yeah, that's the styles of parenting.
No, I think that's really helpful. And clearly when it comes to this kind of area, one of the temptations is to say, right, this is too dangerous, too alarming, and to be a bit draconian in our measures as parents, if you like, the authoritarian style that you mentioned. I mean, you look at a number of topics in your book. Which concerns you most? Of all of them?
Yeah, I think probably the one that I was most shocked when I researched was pornography. The young age at which so many children are accessing porn, often they're not looking at it. They're on a computer without the right protections in place. I think the average age now for children stumbling across porn is 11 years old. And often it might be in someone else's home or, again, you know, they're not actually looking for this stuff. It's found them. And there's been a really high incidence of that during lockdown when many children have been on their own, on screens, unsupervised. So I think that's one that causes me most concern in terms of our children's well-being. And probably alongside that, the one that causes most parents blood pressure to rise is the sheer amount of time that our young people are spending looking at a glowing screen. And inevitably in lockdown, that had to be the case. So I think, yeah, in terms of those two things, there's three areas that I cover in the book, all beginning with the letter C. So one is conduct. So that's how they're behaving online. So it might be things to do with bullying or sexting, that sort of thing. Then contact. So who is it they're talking to online? And sadly, very often people aren't who they appear to be. So the whole issue of grooming. And then content. So, and that would be the whole area of porn or other violent and unsuitable content. So I think those three headings cover most of our concerns. And in the book, I've really tried to help parents navigate them and put some practical tips in their hands.
Yeah, you do. And each chapter has some parenting guides to it, which I think is enormously helpful. On the porn side, of course, you're talking not just about, obviously, the distaste of pornography itself, but also that the addictive potential of pornography is enormously high. And indeed, having chatted to some Christians such as Gerald Coates, did a tour on pornography concerns some years ago, and he said he found, you know, church leaders engaged, and that for some, the addictive properties of pornography had actually affected their lives. And he was talking about youngsters who are involved in education who couldn't focus on their work because they were addicted to pornography. And so it's concerning for those reasons as well as the moral ones.
Absolutely, it is. And in terms of, you know, the way our brains are structured, like you say, the addictive nature of it, but I think also the subtle message in our culture that this is normal. I saw a little film recently where some young people were asked about their attitude to pornography, and most of them thought it was where you go to find out about sex, and also giving young people just the wrong message about the sexual relationship, instead of, you know, parents who can be able to tell them what an amazing God-given gift it is, and how it is about commitment, and it is about love, and it is about intimacy, and all those good things. We've got such a good message to tell. And I think as parents, rather than just to be, no, don't look at porn, but actually to be able to talk about the positives in terms of the context of, you know, what we believe the Bible says, then that's a great thing that we can be doing.
The talk about brain circuitry, etc., connects very happily or unhappily to social media and gaming, of course, where there's a similar element to the whole world of essentially social media, that even those who frame the social media sites such as Facebook, which of course is not so much for teens and children, but certainly things like TikTok and Instagram, they have they build on the pleasure seeking dimension of our brains to become somewhat addictive themselves. And of course that affects very badly the child who, if they're willing to stand away from it, may lose out on peers who are engaged in that, and they feel shunned and distant. So perhaps you could talk a little bit about those worlds for us.
Yes. So I actually have written another book called A Mind of Their Own that links really well with Left to Their Own Devices, because that's all about how we build emotional well-being in our children's lives in this age when we're seeing such a rise in anxiety and depression and mental poor health. And I feel it's no coincidence that the incidence of our ill health, ill mental well-being began at the same year that the smartphone was created. And I do think the selfie culture has something to do with that. So the pressure that our young people are under to create an identity that is way different from the reality of their lives and post it. And then they look at other people's posts and they forget that they have probably edited and filtered their photographs 20 times and it bears no relation to reality. But they look at that and then they feel that they've got to match up to that. So they change their profile. And our young people are under such pressure with that and seeing a different identity than the real one. And I think, again, as parents, just to be able to tell our children that they're loved and accepted for who they are, that they have a God-given identity, that they don't have to create one on social media, again, is a really good thing that we can be doing. So, yeah, the whole social media thing, and the fact when we were just talking then about the brain and the neuroplasticity of the brain means that our brains are wired to change, which is good news and bad news. I think it's when the Bible talks about the renewal of our minds. That's exactly what Paul's talking about in the Bible. So the good news is we can change and change for the better, but our brains are programmed also, and we are, particularly our young people, are looking for affirmation. And so they're measuring their worth and their identity by the number of likes, the number of followers they have. And then our brains rewire to them to want that more, and to we get more, and then they want more again. And so again, just really, really, I think, challenging time for our young people to be able to stand apart from that and to use social media well.
And if I've understood it correctly, this is all at a time when a teenage brain is developing massively, of course, but is lacking sometimes the rational dimension that comes when you're adult. So perhaps you could talk a little bit about that, Catherine.
Yeah, I think any parents of teenagers, this might be good news. I remember one mum, when I explained this to her, she said, it's such a relief to know it's not just it's not just my fault, but it's not all his fault either. And so basically our brains, scientists used to believe that our brains were fully formed when we were quite young, but now they've realized actually they continue to grow and develop. And there's a big burst of activity and development around the teenage years. One expert called it it's like a rewiring upgrade, and it makes them more efficient and faster. But it doesn't all develop at the same time. And so the very last bit to develop is the bit at the very front of the brain called the prefrontal cortex. And that's the bit that is responsible for making long-term logical decisions, for weighing up consequences. And the bit that is developed before that, the amygdala, that's the bit that deals with emotion and impulse and risk-taking. And so our teenagers' brains basically are going to be programmed much more to that impulsive behavior, pleasure-seeking behavior, simply because the bit of their brain that helps them put the brakes on just isn't yet properly formed. And so just knowing that can help us as parents as we try and talk to our teenagers about this whole area of making wise, responsible choices. And just to say, that's our goal as parents, because there's going to be a day when we're not there at their shoulder. So our long-term goal is to help them make wise decisions rather than us just making their world smaller and doing it for them.
Catherine, if you were seeking to, say, mentor someone maybe in their mid to late teens through this kind of world, maybe they've already got a smartphone, they've already engaged in some of this stuff, what would be the kind of things you'd be asking and saying to them that might enable them to navigate this world as maybe seeking to follow Jesus within it all? I appreciate not all teens will be at that point, but imagine just someone who's serious about faith, they know they're a Christian, and they're thinking, crumbs, this is a bit of a minefield. Should I avoid it completely? Should I avoid certain kinds of things? What would be the kind of advice you'd give them?
Yeah, so I think, well, one of the things just on that is that one of the things I say to families, and I think this would be part of the conversation with a young person, is to create what I call a family media agreement. So basically, as a family, sit down with your whole family, so teenagers, little ones, parents, and talk about what are your ground rules going to be for your use of technology. So being intentional, making those decisions up front. And the deal with the family media agreement is that everyone has a say, and then everyone, including the parents, abides by it. So things like, these are the kind of ground rules I would be suggesting to a young person. So don't have your phone at the meal table. Don't charge your phone in the bedroom at night. Don't make it the last thing that you look at night and the first thing that you pick up in the morning. In relation to those family agreements, some people have three columns. So they would say, first of all, yes, you can do that. Middle column, ask us first. Third column, don't even think about it. And that's just a helpful framework to navigate that. But in relation to young people, I would say there's a little phrase, and these young people probably won't be parents themselves, but parent your phone. So you be the one that's in charge. You decide when it gets up, when you put it to bed. You decide what things you're going to allow in, what platforms you think are going to be helpful. I would say be accountable to somebody in terms of the kind of things you look at. There are some great uses out there. There's some great games that are really just different avenues for storytelling. We haven't touched much on gaming, and that's a huge subject in itself and a whole chapter on that. But there's some great Christian resources as well that help us pray, that help us read the Bible, podcasts. So I would say take a holistic view, but be in charge, make those intentional choices, and be accountable to somebody in the way that you do that.
Yes, thank you. And very helpfully, your book looks at gaming and indeed suggests that parents themselves could get engaged in some of the games and actually have quite a bit of fun, or at least quite a bit of insight into the world of the gamer, that it means that, you know, they can enjoy stuff as well.
Yeah, I had a go playing a game which was about a girl who she's a refugee, and you have to actually help her in real time leave her country and get to somewhere that is safe. And I was surprised at how entertaining it was, how informative, how moving and educational. And so there are lots of games. I think I would have been inclined to just put all gaming in one box and think it wasn't a great use of time. But actually, I've discovered that there's a great medium for storytelling, for creativity, for information, for all those different things. But again, along with all these different things we've been talking about, the key for parents is, depending on the age of their child, but to have their eyes on and to be aware of what's going into their phone and what things they're looking at and what kind of games they're playing, and then talk to them about it and be engaged.
Well, Catherine, thank you for your insights today. Obviously, hopefully this has whetted people's appetite to get a copy of the book. They really need to get the full benefit, of course, of the kind of topics that you cover. So it's Catherine with a K and two A's. So Catherine Hill. So remind us where you can get both this book and the book On the Mind.
Yes, so probably all good bookshops, but from Muddy Pearl, the publishers, from their website, and also from Care for the Family.
Okay, so just a reminder then of the title of the book, Left to Their Own Devices with a Question Mark, Confident Parenting in a Post-Pandemic World of Screens. And the book On the Mind, Catherine, was called?
The book On the Mind, it's called, A Mind of Their Own, Building Your Child's Emotional Wellbeing in a Post-Pandemic World. And they really do go together. There's huge, in a good way, huge overlap. In terms of our children's mental well-being, and both, yeah, got some really fun cartoons in them, lots of practical tips, and I hope give parents confidence to be on the front foot and to equip our children with wisdom.
Thanks, Catherine, so much.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Catherine Hill, UK Director of Care for the Family. Parenting is very much a leadership role. And the book that she has written includes the quote, "Before I got married, I had 6 theories about raising children. Now I have 6 children and no theories." If you're a parent, you can maybe relate to this. Many leaders I meet would say that managing and leading in the home is one of the toughest things they do. So why not get a copy of Catherine's book, A Mind of Their Own, and Left to Their Own Devices, the one we looked at in the show. I assure you, I'm not being paid commission to say that. The leadership show includes a wide-ranging look at leadership topics. So do check out the website on Premier or the podcast platform where you listen to this. And you can listen to more material there. All that remains is for me, Andy Peck, to say goodbye and remind you that you have influence where God has placed you. May you use it wisely.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck. Email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.